counsel in the second case may come forward and get ready. I will now call the second case on today's oral argument calendar. That case is number A24-422, State of Minnesota versus Benjamin Gerald Litke. As counsel surely know, each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal argument, and appellant's counsel will have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal argument. Counsel for appellant, you may approach the lectern, and when you do so, please state your name and your client's name. I will mention for the benefit of both counsel that our lectern is adjustable. There are two buttons on the front edge of the there you go. That will move it up and down as you wish. You may begin.
May it please the court, counsel, I am Melvin Welch, W-E-L-C-H, on behalf of Mr. Benjamin Litke, appellant in this matter. Your honors, when I give argument, I'm always tempted to get in and initially defend my client. Obviously, that's my job, my obligation. Show the facts and how he's deserving of this, that, or the other thing, but that's not really what's at issue here. It's not should the court have granted a dispositional departure. Is Mr. Litke deserving of a dispositional departure? The question is solely, did the court carefully analyze the record in making its determination as to whether or not he was deserving of that dispositional departure? It's purely a matter of procedure. And I think that my brief obviously reflects that we're not here to ask for an alternative disposition. We're not here to ask for an alternative determination. We're here to ask the court to remand the matter back to the district court in order for a careful analysis of the materials before it in making its determination.
And just before you go further, is there anything to suggest that the district court did not carefully analyze the record?
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, when the district court made its decision, and I'm going to quote the best I can here, although my material's not perfectly set up for review, the court said, I've gone back and forth on this. Mr. Litke said all the right things on paper, but at the end of the day, nothing excuses what was done, and I'm not going to grant the dispositional departure, or something close to that. And so that raises two issues. Number one, what did he review? What did he look at? And number two, did he in fact apply the proper analysis? So the court says, I've gone back and forth. This is very similar to what this court in State versus Mendoza stated was, so in that case, it was analysis again on a departure, dispositional individual had been, the appellant there had been involved in a conspiracy controlled substance. And ultimately the court did not grant that dispositional departure, stating there's arguments on both sides here. And this court said, at best that says the court may have reviewed the material, but it wasn't really certain. The problem there was that the court relied on immigration status, which the court could not do so, and because we couldn't really tell what the court had reviewed, had to remand it for that analysis. Likewise here, I go back and forth on this. It indicates, all right, I'm giving some consideration to the motion, but we don't really know what was considered. We know that there was a memorandum submitted on behalf of the motion, there was argument held, there was a psychosexual evaluation that was reviewed, there was a pre-sentence investigation reviewed, but what did the court look at? I mean, ultimately, this is a very, a departure in the judge's decision, departure is given massive discretion, right? An abuse of discretion. Even if the court sees all the facts in front of it and says, you know, You meet all the marks for a departure, I'm still not going to grant it. That's all right. The court can do that. But what the court can't do is not exercise the discretion or not carefully review that record. And so the reason it's important to ensure the court does that and it gives it the proper analysis is because everybody has the right to an appeal. This is an issue of procedure. This is an issue of due process. The notice was given to the judge of this intent to seek a motion or a departure. Materials were submitted, but then we don't know what was reviewed, and so we have no capability.
Counsel, it sounds like you're asking us to assume that in the absence of a recitation by a district court judge of every document he or she reviewed, we assume the judge didn't review the document.
I'm not asking the court to do that, Your Honor, and I understand that.
I mean, we don't assume district court error, and you say there were oral arguments, there were written arguments, there was a PSI. And we assume the judge read all of that in the absence of evidence to the contrary.
And that's where I think that we don't have evidence that supports the judge did review it. And I understand the court's concern here, right? We look at State versus Pagel. This is a case where individual appealed or applied for a durational departure, CrimSex 1, presumptive significant sentence, and the court goes through that painstaking review. I have looked at this. I have looked at that. And it becomes... robotic, it becomes mechanical, and I'm not really asking the court to have district courts engage in that magic.
What are you asking for here? What is it the district court should have done, in your view, to prevent this appeal issue?
The district court should have at least identified that it had reviewed all items in front of it. And that, not even that was done here. All that was done is
but,
I've gone back and forth.
But then that goes back to my first point, which is we don't presume error. Error would be a judge making a ruling without reviewing the record. So you're asking us to presume that the district court did not review the record because the district court didn't say it had.
Well, I'm not asking the court to presume that it had because obviously it's an abuse of discretion. The court can indicate I've reviewed the record, but he didn't do that. He said I've gone back and forth on this. We don't know what he's reviewed. We know that there were submissions, multiple submissions, but we don't know what he looked at. And I know this, Your Honor has postured it as saying, well, you want him to give a recitation. And obviously, black line rules make life a lot easier. I don't think that I'm asking for that here. What I'm asking for is at least that there is some indication that the record, which was before the court at the time, was reviewed. And we don't know that it was because of the ambiguity of the statement by the court here. It doesn't identify it. And the court in its statement, I've gone back and forth, it does not excuse your behavior, also raises that as a question. The court appears to be saying it's applying an excuse standard. That's not the standard. It's substantial and compelling bases. And from the materials we have before, obviously there are substantial and compelling bases that have been presented. Age of the individual, he's young, record, he had, I think he was 33 years old, record at the time, he had no felony record, he was a 0 point, so he'd be a first-time felon. The first time looking at a significant sentence to the Department of Corrections, I think it was State versus Allen, identified that as a substantial issue. He had been on supervision for 4 years at that time without any issues. He had mental health diagnosis. He had an addiction issue that complicated that mental health diagnosis. There were a number of different issues to be considered as to whether this individual would be present a substantial reliability of performing well on supervision, right? Because the granting the departure is not excuse of the conduct. That would be no punishment. It would be whether or not a substantial compelling basis has been presented.
What about this record says that your client was particularly amenable to treatment in the community? So that's the standard. I mean, the things you've described probably apply to most people who are before the court in your client's situation. And the idea of the guidelines is to sentence similarly situated people similarly. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be able to get a departure, to point to something that shows this is an exceptional circumstance, and here's why. That's why in Soto the court emphasized particularly amenable to probation. I'm just not seeing that here.
Well, I'm not also not here to argue that either, right? That's not the issue that's before the court. The TROG ultimately sets out the factors that can be considered in determining whether or not a person presents that particularly amenability to probation. And ultimately, it's the court's determination whether or not it meets that. But what is at issue here, Judge, is that process, is that procedure. I mean, again, even if my client does present those items, the issue still remains, was it considered by the court? This court has said there must be careful consideration of the items related to that motion, that the court exercises a painstaking review of those items for consideration. Again, Court doesn't have to grant the departure, even if a person meets it, but they have to go through that process. Because there, if there is a right of appeal, if there is a right of review, well, then we have to know what is to be reviewed. And ultimately, we're in a position here we don't know what was reviewed because it was not clear. And that's every defendant's right to have notice and process, due process. And so that's what's at issue here. And it's complicated further by the fact where the court says, I've gone back and forth, et cetera, et cetera. It does not excuse your behavior. Well, now we're left with the concern is this court applying the proper standard of review? It's not excuse. Excuse is not the standard. The standard is substantial and compelling, particular amenability to supervision, and that he has reviewed the whole record. So that's the difficulty that we get into. I understand the court's reluctance, Your Honor, in saying, well, we don't necessarily want a magical recitation. And I agree, we don't want a magical recitation. But we do want, at a bare minimum, the capability to identify that which was reviewed by the court. And unfortunately, that we don't have that here. And that's where the error has occurred, and that's ultimately why we're asking for the remand.
But it does seem like you are asking for magic language for the district courts to use in these cases, because we've affirmed other cases where the court has just said, I've reviewed everything. That's it. Like, didn't identify what they particularly reviewed. And here, by saying, you've said all the right things on paper, it at least has the implication that the judge read the paper, which says all the right things where, you know, the person said the right things on paper.
And unfortunately, Your Honor, which paper? I mean, is it the
PSI?
I've read
all the records. Like, it doesn't identify. It's such a vague, broad statement. And we've affirmed those cases.
And all the record is different from on paper. I mean, I hate to be nitpicky, right? But ultimately, in this one, I have to be a little bit. Well, was it the PSI that he came across well on? Was it the psychosexual report that he came across well on? Was it the memorandum of his argument and the different presentation
but,
that he
but
came across
there
well
again,
on?
That's where it's getting into that sort of
the magical recitation,
right? Like,
yeah.
How much do we have to have the courts identify when it's I've reviewed all the record or on paper, you've said all the right things. And so there's the implication both places, I've reviewed everything or I've reviewed at least the records that show maybe you should get this departure.
Well, that is a difficult position I'm in, right? What is the proper wording to express it? What is the proper key to send up for review that I've reviewed everything that's in this record? I hate to be the one to say I'm not doing this, but then I'm doing it. I'd like to offer the court an answer. Like I said, I think when we all went through law school, the black letter law and that line was a wonderful tool for us to know what the proper thing was. And here we're dealing with the discretion and the abuse of discretion. So it's so broad, we tend to give the greater benefit of the doubt. And that's why in this situation, I think the difficulty is, all right, we have an ambiguous statement of what was reviewed, much like in Mendoza. I go back and forth. But we also have the question of what was the standard applied. The judge says it doesn't excuse your behavior. That's not what's being requested of the court, to give an excuse and not punish. That's not the request. The request is whether or not to grant the dispositional departure because this client presents substantial compelling reasons to show their particular amenability to supervision.
Mr. Welch, are you asking for us to require the district court to make express findings on the various factors?
No, that's not required of the district court. And there's case law that says on these situations that the district court does not have to make express findings as to why they do or do not grant that dispositional departure. It's just, did they give a careful review of the record? And that's what's needed for
us. So in other words, you don't need the district court to identify the factors, but you just want to know which documents that are in the district court record were reviewed?
It seems like that, and I shouldn't say it seems like, that is what this court has said in the cases where it has sent it back on remand for review, is that we're not sure what was reviewed here, like in Mendoza.
What if a district judge says, I've read the entire record?
that would suffice. I would think that, I mean, especially as Judge Larkin indicated, you know, we give the benefit of the judge, especially on abuse of discretion. And we trust that when they say they've reviewed the record, they've reviewed the record. If that had been the case, I don't think I would have this argument. The problem is that wasn't the case, right? We don't know what was reviewed. And I know it's nitpicky, but when we're dealing with something this is a right that defendant has an argument. And sometimes they don't have great arguments, but at least they have an argument that is to be considered, and the court is to give due consideration and careful consideration to that argument. In this case, we don't have that evidence for review that the court gave that careful consideration to that argument. Rather, it was there's good arguments on both sides. I've gone back and forth. I've looked at paper. I understand if there's not the decision to grant this departure, very well. That is obviously within the court's discretion, but what's not in the discretion of the court is if they have the opportunity to review the record, they must review the record. And this court is very clear on that. If there's discretion that is granted to the court, they must exercise that discretion. To not do so is error, and that's where the specific error occurred in this. I see my time is nearly concluded, and so if there are no further questions, I thank the court. I ask this court to grant the defendant's appeal and remand this matter for resentencing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Welch. Counsel for respondent, you may approach. Please identify yourself and your client.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Carl Erickson, and I am representing the respondent state of Minnesota here today. The sentencing guidelines were created to promote rational, consistent sentencing and reduce disparity by laying out presumptive sentences that are presumptively correct for particular types of crimes and particular crimes, focusing particularly on imposing prison sentences for person crimes such as this one, and then it allows departure from those sentences if there are substantial and compelling reasons that the district court must lay out. And here the district court imposed a presumptive sentence which, as the very name suggests, is presumptively correct. And I want to read exactly what the district court said here, indicating that it did consider what was going on. It said, I'll just be blunt with everyone. I've gone back and forth in this matter all the time I've considered it. But at the end of the day, I'm here to do what I think is right and what is just and what is fair. And Mr. Litke, you have said all the right things on paper, and if you have done all the right things, none of that excuses what happens here. And for that reason, I'm not going to give you a dispositional departure. So from that, we know that the district court has considered what it wants to do. It's spent all the time considering it. So we're not clear how long that time has been, but it's clear it has considered it. It's weighed the efforts back and forth. It's that evocative image of the scale of justice weighing back and forth what it wants to do. So it's clear that the judge knew there was reasons for departure and reasons against departure, but ultimately concluded that the presumptive sentence was correct, as the name suggests. And this court's case law is clear that the district court doesn't need to lay out the specific reasons why a presumptive sentence is imposed. It only needs to do that when it grants a departure, which I think my friend has acknowledged that's not what it has to do. And I think the district court's statement there does make clear that it did consider the record. And I just want to point out that we're not looking at just a paper record here, that the district court sentencing decision came at the end of the sentencing hearing after it had heard arguments from both counsel, arguments both of which mentioned the PSI, which we've already talked about and has been submitted, the psychosexual evaluation that was submitted, an earlier psychological evaluation, were all discussed in arguments of counsel.
And was there also a victim impact statement?
There was a victim impact statement, and at sentencing, the victim's mother also read that same statement to the court and discussed the significant impact this crime has had on her family, the difficulties that the child has had in her own personal life in dealing with situations where she has to remove clothes, like such as to get a shot, and the impact that this has had on family relationships and the way the child is now scared, is scared to go to bed by herself and has nightmares, and the significant impact this has. So at the very least, without making any presumption that the district court has done its proper review of the record, as we do assume, we know that the district court was aware of these things, so we don't have to go with the presumption that the district court properly reviewed everything in the record before it, even though I think there is every reason to believe it did, because like it said, it had spent time considering it and gone back and forth on what to do. So there was a victim impact statement to directly answer your question, and the victim's mother did read it. And I think that was an impactful set of facts in the district court's decision. The prosecutor, when they were making their argument, focused primarily on that. She said that the victim's mother's statement put very well how the impact the crime has had and the reasons not to grant a departure. And also at sentencing hearing, I want to point out that a representative of corrections reviewed the PSI, noted her concerns with it, noted her concerns with some variation on what Mr. Littke had said about whether he remembered the crime or not, and the level of remorse he had, and the problems that created with addressing the sexual abuse in treatment and that would raise. So all these things were before the district court, and I just think there's no basis to think that the district court didn't think those things, and we shouldn't assume that the district court abused its discretion. As you've indicated, Judge Larkin, we presume that the district court did its due diligence unless there's a reason not to. And that's exactly what happened here. And just like in Pagel, this court clearly said that the district court doesn't have to lay out the specific reasons for imposing a presumptive sentence if it imposes a presumptive sentence, because that's the very concept of a presumptive sentence, that it's presumptively right. It only has to justify departures from that sentence. And I think there's been several cases, I think, cited primarily in the briefs. And I just want to point out on those, I think that in those cases where this court has reversed presumptive sentences, it's only because the district court has misapplied the law. So in Curtis, which was decided shortly after the sentencing guidelines were created, what the district court judge seems to have thought was that the presumptive sentence was a strict box, that it had to impose a presumptive sentence, because it made a statement that it personally thought the sentence was too high and that it imposed the presumptive sentence. So my understanding of Curtis is that this court read that as the district court believing it couldn't depart, and the holding is that the district court can depart, it just has to justify that departure. And then in Mendoza, which has been addressed, the district court erred as a matter of law in considering immigration status as a consideration in whether to impose a prison sentence or not, and that it had to be remanded so the district court could exercise its discretion without considering an improper factor, namely immigration status. And then in State v. Allen, a recent non-precedential opinion of this court, the district court said that it couldn't consider the defendant's age and like one other factor in whether to depart the defendant's age and criminal history score because those were already encompassed in the presumptive sentence.
I'm sorry.
I
was swatting a bug. I apologize.
Well, if you do have anything to say, though, I'm always happy to answer questions. In Allen, the district court said it couldn't consider those because they'd already been taken into account in the sentencing guidelines. And this court said that's error as a matter of law. Those are factors that you can consider in deciding whether to depart or not. So in all those cases, the district court either considered something improper or didn't consider something that it could consider, so it wasn't clear how it would have exercised its discretion if it had looked at the proper factors. But in this case, there's no indication the district court applied any improper factors or thought that it couldn't consider certain things it could. Instead, it looked at all the evidence before it, it looked at the PSI that had been submitted, the psychological evaluations, the victim impact statement, it considered all that it had heard at the sentencing hearing, and decided that, in this case, the presumptive sentence was the correct one for Mr. Littke and imposed that sentence. Unless the court has any other questions, I guess that's about all I had prepared to say.
It appears there are none.
All right. Thank you. So the state would just ask that you affirm the district court and the presumptive sentence for Mr. Littke.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Mr. Welch, you have an opportunity for rebuttal.
I don't have any rebuttal, Your Honor. I don't think I reserved any time. Oh, there's time for 5 minutes.
Minutes are automatically allotted for rebuttal. You need not reserve it.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. I don't have much to say here. I think that the error here, Your Honor, I'm just going to be rehashing the old points, is that while I'm not asking for this court to apply a magical formula, we do at least need to know what was reviewed, what was looked at by the court for review, because that's where there could be error that was done. And here the court said, looked at paper, gone back and forth, and there's nothing that excuses it. So the concern here is that is the court applying the proper reviewing standard, and has the court looked at all the materials that are in the record related to that motion? And I would submit to this court that we can't know. And because what was provided to this court, what was provided for review, does not meet the standard of knowing what was reviewed, what went into the careful review of the record, that's where the error is. And it's purely a procedural error. Again, the court doesn't have to grant the motion for departure, but the court has to at least identify that it has looked at all the materials related to that motion for departure. That's what procedure requires. So I have no further arguments for the court. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Welch. Thank you to both counsel for your arguments. The case is submitted. The court will issue its opinion in writing within 90 days.